disruption zone. Opportunity lives where the status quo dies. Talking to the greatest innovators, disruptors, and off-the-wall inventors we can scrounge up. You laugh, you'll learn, you'll be inspired. Now, here are your hosts, Leland Conway and Cameron Mills.
Red flag laws are a violation of your constitutional rights. And it's another in a long line of things that the American people have decided it's okay to give up a freedom in exchange for what they think is a little safety. This is a disturbing trend, and it's a disturbing trend because when you talk about authoritarian regimes, they always sell things as we're doing this for your safety. And while we don't have an authoritarian regime right now, we're only one Michael Bloomberg away from one. And imagine when he gets the power of things like red flag laws and more across the country. This is a guy who hates guns and hates freedom. It's kind of funny. I just saw where he qualified for the next Democrat debate, Michael Bloomberg. And he's a real threat. I wouldn't have thought that a year ago. But here's the thing. I find it fascinating that liberals and progressives are complaining about Trump as an authoritarian. He's not an authoritarian. He's actually, well, let's put it this way. He uses authoritarian language. He is not authoritarian in action. I defy you to tell me what it was he's done that's authoritarian in terms of action. Certainly nothing that's outside the scope of anything any president prior to him hasn't done. He's not authoritarian. He has authoritarian language sometimes. It's kind of like the thing where they think he's like limited the freedom of the press. He hasn't limited the freedom of the press. There's no more open and engaging president in my lifetime than President Trump. He just has crass language. He's not authoritarian. But you know who is authoritarian? The liberals are complaining, saying, we don't want an authoritarian president. We got to get rid of Trump. So we're going to take Michael Bloomberg. What? That guy is the most authoritarian. Like, he would be. He's not even a Democrat. Like, he's not a Democrat and he's not a Republican. He's a statist. That's what he is. He's a statist. He's a fascist. He's terrible. I mean, this is a guy who threw young African-Americans up against the wall and frisked them for no apparent reason. This is a guy who said you can't have a 32-ounce soda because you're getting too fat. He's the ultimate authoritarian. So when you give over your freedoms, not thinking about what future administrations may be like, you're giving the tools for them to use authoritarian actions. And that's exactly what a red flag law does. Sure, it sounds like it'd make you safe. This guy's crazy. He shouldn't have guns. Our founding fathers understood that you should be able to stand trial and face your accuser. Red flag laws do not allow you to do that until after the fact. Anyway, I'm going to bring in Emily Taylor. She's a gun rights attorney from U.S. Law Shield. We'll talk to her in just a couple minutes and get her take on all of this. I was filling in on KHOW in Denver and talked to her while I was on the air there, and you're going to love this. A couple of quick news stories, though, before we get to that on this episode of the podcast. Meet Generation Alpha. If you've been wondering what the next generation will be called, apparently we're starting the alphabet over again. So we had me, Gen X, then you had Millennials, then you had Gen Z. Now you have Generation Alpha. That's kids born between 2010 and now. The term Generation Alpha was coined by Mark McCrindle, a social researcher in Australia. The group was born when the iPad was launched, when Instagram was created. The Generation Alpha kids do not know a world in which there is no Instagram. They're the first group shaped by mobile devices, but that comes with a bunch of drawbacks. According to experts, kids that are born after 2010 are much less proficient in practical skills, assessing and approaching risk, and setting and achieving goals. Listen to this. According to an expert in this field, helping a Gen A with science, technology, and math learning, you would have to do this. You would have to get them up to par on social competencies, entrepreneurial skills, strength and coordination, physical strength and coordination, financial literacy, innovation, resilience, and resourcefulness. All things we all learned when we were kids. Now apparently kids are not learning them. These kids are visual. Videos are how they consume information and entertainment. So the question will be, how will that play out in the future? It's kind of scary. I mean, look, all generations will correct themselves. They all have bugaboos. This one's going to be very interesting. Thieves in Hong Kong are stealing toilet paper during the coronavirus-fueled shortage. There are some interesting side effects of the coronavirus epidemic. Thieves in Hong Kong are stealing toilet paper because of shortages caused by the outbreak. Does that mean people have the ploopies on coronavirus? No, I looked it up on CDC. Here's what they say about the coronavirus. Fever, cough, shortness of breath. It's essentially a common cold, only ratcheted up a little bit. About 2% of the people that get it die. We could have a pandemic on our hands, but chances are you're still going to be fine. Anyway, police in Hong Kong arrested knife-carrying robbers who made off with hundreds of rolls of toilet paper in a heist early last week outside a supermarket. Local reports say the two men threatened a delivery man who was unloading the toilet paper and stole about 600 rolls. Police didn't have to take long to arrest the bandits and recover some of the toilet paper. I guess it was easy to find somebody carrying boxes of toilet paper. I can see it now. You're in jail.
Hey, buddy. What are you in for?
Toilet paper heist? Yeah. I don't think that's going to go over well. And finally this. More people die taking selfies? Coffee. Than in shark attacks. More people die in taking selfies than in shark attacks. Yes, my friends, narcissism is alive and well in 2020. 999 women, 1,024 men asked whether they find out whether they were willing to be able to appear Instagram perfect. It found that testosterone-fueled men are more likely to take risks than women, with 61% of males accepting the challenge of a cliff-edge photo so they would look perfect in their selfie. A new survey found that 41% of the U.S. have already risked their safety in pursuit of a selfie. Wow. More people have died taking selfies than in shark attacks. All right, back to red flag laws. Reason.com did a report on Florida's red flag laws, and I imagine this certainly applies across the country. The law reveals that judges who are supposed to decide whether someone poses enough of a threat to justify suspending their Second Amendment rights almost always defer to the conclusions reached by law enforcement agencies. Florida, like every other state with a red flag law, allows police to obtain temporary orders forbidding people to possess firearms. When police sought final orders, which they did in 93% of the cases, judges issued 96% of the time with the police. Respondents usually didn't even try to defend themselves. In 76% of cases, respondents agreed to the final orders prior to the hearing. How can there be due process when three-quarters of respondents never even presented their side of the story? Now, you might surmise that, according to Reason, this is Reason's writing, you might surmise that respondents gave up without a fight because the police had strong evidence against them. But that is not necessarily true. In these cases, people who have already lost their Second Amendment rights are confronting a complicated and intimidating process, and they are doing so without the aid of a lawyer unless they can afford one and find one in time. Florida, like every other state with a red flag law except for Colorado, does not provide court-appointed counsel for respondents trying to get their guns back. So your due process is taken away in Florida, particularly, and you don't even get court-appointed counsel to fight for your due process. Now, Kentucky is now considering a red flag law, and it's bipartisan in its approach, and that scares the crap out of me that we have Republicans willing to throw due process out the window. I wanted to bring on Emily Taylor. She is a legal expert and gun rights attorney for U.S. Law Shield. I talked to her last week when I was filling in on KHOW in Denver. Here's that conversation.
There's the famous story in Maryland where a guy's sister, they got into a family fight, and the sister decided to punish him by reporting red flag law, you know, reporting him as dangerous. The police went to his house at 5 o'clock in the morning. He was unaware that he had been deemed dangerous. And so, as would just about anyone who gets a weird knock on the door at 5 a.m., he went to the door with a firearm in his hand. The police shot him, killed him. His sister later said, yeah, I did that because we were angry at each other. He had no opportunity to rebut the charges against him. And his due process, well, he never got it because he's dead now. So the question becomes, how can there be due process when three quarters of respondents never even present their side of the story, according to the Reason report? They also said when police sought final orders, which they did in 93% of cases, judges issued them 96% of the time. So 96% of the time, the police got what they were asking for, which may mean the police were doing a very good job and only going after people who really deserve to have their guns taken away. Let's ask Emily Taylor. She's with U.S. Law Shield. They're an organization that advances Second Amendment rights and defends those who have to, unfortunately, use their Second Amendment to defend their own lives. Emily, welcome. How are you?
Oh, I'm well. How are you?
I'm good. So let's start with this. It seems like a high percentage, 96% of the time the judge just gives the police what they ask for. Does that mean that the judge just does whatever the police say, or does that mean that the police are doing a very good job in only bringing cases that truly need to be listed as a danger to people's lives?
You know, it is, I think it's actually a combination of two factors that ultimately just go to, the fact that the judges are going to be ruling for the person who wants the guns taken away. Those two things are, one you already mentioned, which is that when someone comes, you know, at 4 a.m. and knocks on your doors and says, "We're the police, we're here to confiscate all your weapons," you're not going to react well, even if you don't lose your life over it. It's not going to be pretty. Most of us are going to be, we've had no notice that this order's been enacted, so we're going to be angry, confused, upset. Maybe we've come to the door with a firearm. If you knock on my door in the middle of the night, that's what I'm doing.
Yeah, me too.
All of these things contribute to more evidence that you are unstable, dangerous, and that you should have your weapons taken away. That's one issue. The other issue is you have no right to an appointed attorney at these hearings. So if you can't afford to shell out several thousand dollars for an attorney, you are at the disadvantage.
Yeah. Well, let's look at this from maybe kind of an example of real life. When you were a kid, I don't know if you have siblings or not. I had three sisters. And there's always two sides to a story. If my sister, if we had done something bad outside, my sister and I would be racing each other to be the first one to get to mom. And it was imperative that we were both there at the same time so we could tell our story. Because whoever got there first, if the other wasn't there to defend themselves, you know what I mean? You had a sense of, wait a minute, maybe that's going to color their impression of what actually happened. And then you become the one that gets questioned as if you were, you know what I'm saying? It turns justice on its head because you have, and God bless the police, the vast majority of them are not trying to infringe on people's Second Amendment rights or any other rights for that matter. But you still have someone who has an opinion of a situation, who is talking to a judge, and you can't rebut any of that. You can't explain any of those circumstances until after they've already come and violated your rights.
Oh, that's absolutely right. And just to add something else into this that really is biased against the gun owner, judges are elected in Florida, in Texas, in most states, whether or not it's on a partisan basis, they are elected. And that's something that is always going to be nagging in the back of their minds when they have this sort of petition in front of them, which is, if I think this is a tough case or a close call, and maybe I think that because I only heard one side of the story at first, right? For whatever reason, they feel like it's a close call. They are not going to side with the gun owner, because then if the gun owner goes, hurts himself, hurts someone else, and they end up losing re-election because it's their opponent has just splashed the media headlines with this terrible decision they've made. You know, the safest thing for their jobs and for their re-election is to take the guns away.
Right.
And that's just, in almost every state, based on the climate we have now, is just going to be the long and short of it. So we've got, we have so many things working against a fair process here, which is just, it's why these red flag laws are such a bad idea.
It's like a mini minority report, right? For the good of society, we're okay just going and just plucking people out of the situation that they're in, and we'll sort it all out later. Why do you think today's America, because overwhelmingly, Colorado has red flag laws. I'm from Kentucky. And even there, they're now considering, and Kentucky is about as Second Amendment stalwart as you're going to get. And it's written into our Constitution in a way that many other states don't have that protection the way it's written into the Constitution there. And yet they're still considering it. There's so many people pushing for it, and they're pushing it as part of a package of, quote unquote, common sense gun laws. Why is today's America so ready to accept that someone's Second Amendment rights just be ripped away from them without due process because I guess there's this false sense of safety around it?
Yeah, well, and, you know, I think, frankly, part of the driving factor here is a little bit of kind of the fast food culture that we've developed. We want things to happen quickly. We want quick fixes. We want magic pills, which, you know, we can largely get, right? I mean, I can have my groceries delivered to my house. I mean, I can make things really easy. And the answer that seems to be the easy magic pill for people is, oh, there was a mass shooting. The guns did the shooting. Take the guns away.
Right.
And unfortunately, the real answer is so much harder than that. And no one wants to sit down and talk about the really long, arduous process we have to actually determine what's going on, what's causing people to, enact a mass shooting. And we're going for the fast food option, which is essentially what a red flag law is. And, I don't know that we can unring that bell of culture change that we've got going on right now.
We're talking to Emily Taylor, U.S. Law Shield. My wife and I, for some reason, have gotten into binge watching this stupid show called Arrow on Netflix. We're in the second season. And there was this gun buyback program that they were trying to get guns off the street in the bad part of town or whatever. And in the middle of their gun buyback program, some of these gangsters who had gotten a hold of some military weapons drive up and shoot like people. Like they just do this, like sort of this mass shooting. And the guy's like, we control this town, blah, blah, blah. And we're sitting there watching this sort of Hollywood depiction that's supposed to be like anti-gun. And I'm laughing because I'm like, this is exactly why disarming people is wrong. You're literally disarming people so that the people with the guns, the criminals, can come and shoot them. And you're showing it, believe it or not, in Hollywood while you're trying to make the case the other way. It is a cultural thing. What do you think, as a legal expert, is the strongest argument from your perspective in a courtroom against a red flag law?
It's going to be the due process.
But no one cares about that anymore. I mean, you just pointed that out, I think, accurately. Fast food culture, yeah. We don't care about due process because it doesn't affect most of us.
No, that's absolutely right. But legally, you know, as to what is ultimately going to influence a higher court judge who's looking at this, who, Lord help us if our judges become fast food judges. What is that judge going to be really concerned about legally? And it's going to be that this is going to be the first time in our nation's history that we have taken away a constitutional right based on such vague laws. And that's really our issue here. It's, we have some what are called procedural due process issues where we talk about, you know, you have this ex parte order, you don't get a chance to defend yourself, what's happening in the judge's mind through there. But we also have this thing called substantive due process, which is, you know, when a law says, oh, we're going to take guns away from dangerous people,
right,
and none of these laws define that,
right,
well, that's a problem. We don't strip people of constitutional rights based on vague laws. And so I think that's our strongest legal argument right now.
Yeah, but we have to find a way to put it into retail terms for the people who get fast food news, too, and a way to effectively articulate that these are bad ideas because of what the consequences are. Emily, it's always great talking to you. You've got great knowledge of this stuff, and we appreciate what you do in defending the Second Amendment and always being willing to chat with us.
Oh, we appreciate you, too. Thank you so much.
All right. It's Emily Taylor, U.S. Law Shield. As Ryan, I was thinking about this. I would challenge one thing that she said. This was the first time that we've gone around due process. I would say it's the second time. And the first time is really the reason why this time's been okay. The first time was with the Patriot Act.
Right.
When we basically said the government can spy on you and you don't have to know it and you don't get to face your accuser. And we were like so okay with that because all of that abuse of due process, which is what allowed the entire sham of this ridiculous Russia collusion hoax to sort of be emulated on or foisted on us as a people, because that was all due to FISA abuses. We have a secret court. We have a secret court in the United States of America that no one who's being challenged in that secret court even knows they're being challenged. So, but we're so used to that. We're like, well, it keeps us safe from terrorists or tourists, as George W. Bush used to say. Tourist. It keeps us safe from terrorists. So why wouldn't we want to be kept safe from crazies with guns, right? I mean, it's so easy to make that leap. And I think the first one is what led to the second one being so easy. We're used to it. We get our Fourth Amendment rights violated every time we go to the airport. You get your junk touched. For some of us, it might be the only time. But I'm just, what?
You
I'm
had
just,
to say that on Valentine's Day.
I know. All right.
People are already feeling down enough as it is, single folk out there.
All right.
That was Ryan Schuling. He's the producer on 630 KHOW in Denver, who I was working with on that show on Valentine's Day where we had Emily Taylor on. And so I would just disagree with one thing that Emily Taylor said. This isn't the first time that we've given up our right to due process and can't face our accuser. That bridge was crossed and burned when we passed the Patriot Act, and that allowed for the creation of a secret court whereby the federal government can look in through your stuff without you even knowing that they're doing it because a judge secretly allows them to do so. To put this in terms that we might be able to understand in terms of real life, imagine you walk into your house coming home from work. You walk into your house, you go into your master bedroom, and there stands a guy in a suit, dark sunglasses, and an IFB in his ear, and he's rifling through your wife's underwear drawer. That's what the government is allowed to do digitally with a FISA warrant without you even knowing about it. That's a scary thought. It's time for us to wake up, start sticking up for our rights again. All right, that's it for today. I got much more coming this week. Later on this week, we'll talk to my friend 12, Mr. FTC, in the podcast later this week. Also, my friend Elle Russ, an actress and author extraordinaire, joins us. How to be confident as bleep. I'll tell you all about that book. Much more coming up this week. Thanks to Dynamics Productions for their help with the audio on this program. My co-host and co-executive producer, Cameron Mills. I am Leland Conway. Thanks for listening to The Disruption Zone. Remember, you can download us and subscribe for free on Apple Podcasts as well as Google Play. We're on Instagram at The Disruption Zone and, of course, at Greatly Londo. Thanks for helping me reach 5,000 Twitter followers. It's at Leland Show on Twitter and at Zone Disruption. Check us out as the episodes continue to come your way. I'm Leland Conway, The Disruption Zone.